Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. It's the 2nd of September, and we welcome you to the program. 14 minutes past 9 o'clock. A great pleasure to have you here on this rainy Wednesday. But we'll all be just rays of sunshine, won't we? Okay, sure. let me introduce the panel to you, and I think the sun will emerge. The sun will rise as I introduce each of our panelists this morning, and I know that you will be welcoming to them and be a ray of sunshine in your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. WAMC's Alan Shartok is in the house. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
Okay, you probably are aware, Joe, that I got to sleep very early, usually around by 7:30, 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And the phone started to ring in the middle of the night by people asking me, you know, what do you know? Who's winning? What happened? And then there's no going back to sleep. So you get the picture.
Yes. So that's the state you're in right now. You were interrupted.
No, I'm fine.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
I'm actually fine. Yeah.
All right. Hold on. I'm gonna introduce Bob, and then I'm gonna sneeze. Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness,
wow.
Homeland.
You could hold it that long.
Cybersecurity at the University of Albany, Bob Griffin. Good morning, Bob.
Thank you, Joe. And there is no correlation to Joe introducing me and his desire to sneeze. I will continue to fill space, Joe, until you are done. So
yeah.
give me the sign when you're set.
I'm phlegm free now. Thank you very much.
That is a great thing to do right now. Hey, Joe, just a reminder that actually today is the anniversary of the victory over Japan that ended World War II.
And, that's correct.
And I know some of the subjects we're going to talk about today hit some issues of our position in the global community. So I'm looking forward to bringing that topic back later.
Good stuff. Thank you very much for reminding us, as always. We also welcome investigative journalist and U Albany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you? Oh, I have to press buttons. Hi, Rosemary. How are you?
Every day.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Say what you were going to say again. Hi. I didn't press the button in time. Go ahead. How are you?
Oh, okay. Hi. I'm here, and I will be spending this afternoon, as I've been spending every afternoon lately, going out collecting census questionnaires from people who didn't fill it out. Please fill out your census questionnaire. It's
now,
important to your community. Get money and recognition. And it's important to make sure that there is not an undercount, as Trump and the Republicans are hoping there will be.
I read a very somewhat graphic article over the weekend about how the people like yourself who are going out and working the census are encountering belligerent, angry, violent people. Have you encountered any of that?
They're awful.
They're awful?
Yes, yes. all of the above. I mean, they just yell, no, I don't want any. And I'll say, I'm not giving anything away. And I'm also upset by the number of people who have no idea what a census is. How can you live in America and not know what the census is? They've only been doing it since 1790. And I can't give vent to my feelings. You know, you have to be polite and suck it all up. And it's not as much fun as I thought it was going to be.
Well, Rosemary, the reason that we have you on
so
every morning, we give you this platform so you can vent, because it's really great radio.
Although, Joe, you'd have to admit, though, if we could send a camera crew after Rosemary,
and I said, I'm with the U.S. Census, and he goes, just a minute, I'll get my mom. And then I hear all this behind the doors rustling and whispering, and a woman fearfully looks around the door and goes, yes. And I go, and then she looks at my badge and turns around and goes, it's the census, dummy. He thought I was with the FBI.
Okay, that is good. Bob, what were you saying?
I was just going to say, if we could send a camera crew with Rosemary, just watching her expression would be absolutely
that would be
great TV.
No, that would be a
but
new
Rosemary,
special.
Thank you for what you're doing.
Wait. Rosemary, you have a badge?
Yeah, you wear a little badge. It's a card, you know, that you wear around your neck.
Okay.
On a lanyard.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
and you have to show it.
Yeah, not like Matt Dillon or anything. Okay.
Although I was just Although I was just reading, very quickly, I was just reading one of those retrospectives on Elvis.
Yeah.
And Elvis went to the White House and met with Nixon. You remember that?
Yeah.
And Nixon gave him a badge because he wanted a badge to go after drug dealers.
Yeah. Well, see how that worked out. Hey, Mike Spain's on the show. Mike Spain is the former associate editor of the Times Union, and as of 12 minutes ago was not scheduled to be on this program. But because we had a last-minute cancellation, I called him, and he answered the phone. That was his first mistake, and then he said yes. So here he is. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, and I don't have a story as good as Rosemary's. I think Bob, you're right. That would be a reality TV show, Census, you know, and people would watch it, and then they'd know what it was, and then when Rosemary came, they know what to do.
Rosemary and the Census.
Nice.
Well, we love living and just keep up, you know, collect the good stories and tell them to us on the radio. That's all we ask. That's good stuff.
I thought I would do this, you know, earn a little bit of money. My kids can always use it.
Yeah.
And to do a good service, and I would get good stories. And so far, it's a lot of work. You know, it's like it's been, well, not today, but it's been like 80 degrees, and you're walking around neighborhoods with, you have to wear, you know, decent clothes. You can't wear shorts. It's hard work. I have new respect, and I really do think the people working for the census really want to do a good job. You know, they're reading all the stuff about how it's a hoax this year, and Commerce and Wilbur Ross and Trump have conspired to undo it and make it inaccurate. But they're working their butts off to really try and make it work. I have respect for them.
Well, I welcome you all, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo, making up the panel this morning. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let us begin by the primary that was held yesterday in Alan's home state of, or the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And the two incumbents, the two longtime incumbents, that the races that we were watching very closely, won those contests. Ed Markey defeating Joe Kennedy, the first time a Kennedy has ever lost in a Massachusetts election, which really we'll talk about that in a second. And also the other big race that we were watching was the first House, first district House race in Massachusetts, Richard Neal versus Alex Morse, and a solid victory by Richard Neal there. So let us begin with Ed Markey holding off Joe Kennedy. So how does a Kennedy lose in the Bay State, Alan?
Well, I think what happens is that after a while, the bloodline runs out. The rationale, and Markey was brilliant in the way he positioned himself, which was to the left. You know, he wasn't going to be just another old senator, centrist senator, which he certainly has been. He was going to come on from the left. He got endorsed by AOC, of all people, and he did what he had to do. And And Kennedy, who we interviewed on WAMC, as we did Markey many times on the Congressional Corner, did not present what would be a different, you know, position from what Markey was talking about. Kennedy tried to say, I'm the progressive, but it obviously did not work. And now he's out of a job. And I worry about him because how will he make a living? Because he had to give up his...
Yeah.
Sarcasm alert.
Give up his House seat. And that seat in the 4th District is still too close to call. So that's interesting as well. You know, but one of the things.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I did know that we had been talking about when we went to sleep. Richie Neal was leading by 20 percentage points. It turns out it's a little more than 18. We always want to get it right, so that's the difference, the 18 versus the 20. It's still a massive, massive victory for Richie Neal.
I want to get to that race in just a second. Just backing up to the Markey Kennedy race,
sure.
Though, do you think, and I'm interested in the panel's thoughts on this, is that So you have, you always talk about this, Alan. I mean, I learned this from you, that you always talk on the program about, you know, waiting, knowing when your time, knowing what time, when you can run and when you can win. It's Massachusetts. If he had waited, Markey is a man in his 70s, you know, maybe one more term. If he had waited, would do you think that had something to do with it, that he was going a little too early?
Well, this is a 6-year term, so he would have. If it was for the Markeys, he was waiting for.
Right, but he has a congressional seat, and he could certainly, you know, as you say, he doesn't need the money.
No. Not that I know. Not that I count his pennies, you know, every night. But I suspect he's a candidate. He's done, you know, rather well. You know, being in the House of Representatives is a hard job. It really is. People don't know it, but you really have to see a lot of people, and you have to take care of all kinds of constituent problems and everything. He may have been getting a little tired of it. And also, he had quite a powerful person to follow, his uncle. Uncle, John F. Kennedy did the exact same thing. You know, he came in and he said, okay, I'm going to take on an entrenched incumbent, albeit a Republican one, and he won. Yeah. And so maybe this is what he thought, was thinking. You know, I don't know.
I thought Kennedy was going to win. I thought his name would pull it off. I was surprised that he didn't run more strongly on his name. But he ran into the same problem that Ted Kennedy did. When asked, why are you running, he did not have a good and cogent answer. There is no reason for him to go after Markey right now. He was a good and honest and hardworking senator, and there was no reason other than he was ready to move up. And I surely hope he wasn't going into the Senate to take a break from politics. You know, like working for Congress is hard, working for the Senate is not. And it just didn't ring with voters this time.
Yeah, I agree.
In my interviews with him, I can tell you the rationale was not presented by him. It was he did make the case. It was that simple. And he was leading in the beginning.
Mike?
No. I think Rosemary summed it up pretty well. It seems to me it was almost saying, I'm like Markey. Markey's been a good senator. He didn't really trash Markey. He was an ageist. He was kind of suggesting Markey's at the end, and I'm a young, energetic guy who can run from one end of the state to the other and have great stamina in my campaigning, and I'm a Kennedy, and don't you really want me in there? But that's not enough of a reason, and I'm kind of impressed that the electorate recognize that. It doesn't mean his time won't come. His name is out there now, but he's also branded with this kind of preemptory attempt to unseat a guy who really did not deserve to be unseated, according to the electorate. And it could have ramifications, and he'll have to find something to do now so that he can stay in the public eye, where he can wage another run at political office. We'll have to see what he does.
Bob. Well, I was thinking about that. I was thinking, I'll be right one to one fast thing. I was thinking about that, what you're just saying now, Mike, and that is that what could he do? He could try to run for governor, but this governor is a Republican and very, very, very popular in Massachusetts. So I think that one's out. You're right. He's going to have to look carefully.
Bob.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
Did you see what Trump said about this race?
I'm sorry. What did Trump say about this race?
He said, even a Kennedy isn't safe in the new radical left Democrat Party. Taxes are up big. Biden has completely lost control. Pelosi strongly backed the loser.
Wow. Bob?
I think he was premature in running. And actually, I was heartened to see that the voters recognized the fact that they had a public servant in Markey who they decided to reward with another term because of the great job that he was doing. So again, I think it bodes well for the understanding of the American electorate. And Alan, before you get too concerned about Mr. Kennedy's future, just remember he gets lifetime benefits because he's been in Congress. So if people really understood the benefits that members of Congress have given to themselves, I actually think they'd be a bit appalled. And as for his future, if Biden wins, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Mr. Kennedy either pop up in a senior position, or he starts to burnish his international resume with an ambassadorship. So I don't think he's done. I do think he was premature in this run, though.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll talk a little bit about the race with Richard Neal and the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, who defeated Alex Morse yesterday. We'll talk about that and your letters, too. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Alan Shartok, Mike Spain, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. We'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable panel this morning. Alan Shartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Bob Griffin. We've been talking about the primary in Massachusetts yesterday, the Senate race, and of course in the 1st Congressional District, Richard Neal defeating Holyoke Mayor Alex Morse, a young progressive Democrat who had attacked Neal as too entrenched and too removed from the day-to-day problems of his diverse constituents. Alan, I think a lot of us thought that this race would perhaps be a little bit closer than it was. So give us a sense of what you think happened there in your neck of the woods.
Well, first of all, Joe, people tend to be reflective of their own hometown priorities. And certainly Richie Neal, who, as you know, I have great respect for, was the congressman who represented the biggest city in this part of the country, and that is Springfield, as opposed to Alex Morse from Holyoke. So I think that was a big part of what happened here. I also think there was a tremendous amount of respect and affection for Richie, and the attempt to suggest that he was himself, that Neal wasn't progressive, is just wrong. At least that's what I thought. There are people who disagree with me, but, you know, what happened was that when Elliott Engel lost in the Bronx, he lost because the demographics of the region had changed substantially. That is not true in Berkshire County, for example, or in the Richie Neal 1st Congressional District. Now, Morse did do well in Great Barrington and some other places. Nevertheless, not nearly well enough so that this was not the incredible blowout that it was.
Do you think it is telling that he did not win his home city of Holyoke?
Well, I think it's huge. Yeah. I mean, I think it's huge. Because he now has a series, if you listen to his concession speech, which it was supposed to be a concession speech. It was basically a fairly angry speech, which we played. You get the feeling that it was as much to reassure his constituency in Holyoke that he was doing everything he could for them, which means, of course, that one of his options is to run for mayor again. And if in fact the signal had been given that he didn't win Holyoke, which I believe is something that the Richie Neal people thought was going to happen, then it does not portend well for him to run again in Holyoke.
Mike, any thoughts?
Mayor.
I think that a congressman is very, very difficult to unseat. I know that we've had a few high-profile Congress members knocked out, and Abrams is just one of them recently. But you're right. If the demographics haven't really changed, or the Congress member who is representing the area hasn't committed any major crimes or gaffes, it's like congressman for life after a couple of terms. I think that's going to be, we're all watching what could be a closer race than earlier expected in New York's, I think it's the 21st district, the North Country, with incumbent Elise Stefanik is being challenged with a lot of money. by a challenger who's raised money based on the negatives that Stefanik caused when she was such an outspoken supporter of Trump during the impeachment period. And it's still very, very difficult to throw out an incumbent member of Congress. And by and large, they really have to screw up for them to get beaten. So I think Richie Neal has not done that. You know, he did have a few negatives, you know, support of pharmaceuticals. You know, that was the big thing that we heard a lot about. But in the end, he's there. And unless he really screws up, he's there as long as he wants to be.
Rosemary?
Yeah, but 18 points.
Well,
18 points, a lot of points.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rosemary.
I want to know what you think about the role of the alleged smear campaign against the mayor by Democrats at the university where he worked. There were lots of news articles about that Democrats, young Democrats, hoping to get a job with Neal, put out portrayed as an anti-gay campaign because he had sex with students, not in his own class. I know we talked about it. It still makes me kind of sick to my stomach that someone would do this, even if it's not in the class. You know, you don't date in the school where you teach, I think. But did that play a role of any significance? You've not mentioned it up to now.
Well, I think so. I mentioned it earlier. I mentioned it in the sense of that he was trailing in what polls were taken prior to that event happening, and then the numbers that we saw last night were very similar to what those original poll numbers were. So obviously it didn't help, but I don't know if it hurt any. So the Daily Collegian newspaper put out a letter that said that students felt uncomfortable with interactions that they had with Alex Morse. They then Morse said they were consensual relationships. He denied that he had abused his influence. The Morse campaign was saying that it was because he was gay. And I think a lot of people said the same thing you said, Rosemary, which was, okay, but gay or not, it's having a relationship with a student.
Right.
And you're going to events as a mayor and as a lecturer on a university, and you're going to events and you are picking up those students, allegedly. So is that something that whether, you know, no matter sexuality aside, that's still the question, and I can't think that didn't have a role to play.
I know. I thought his speech was, as Alan said, angry, and I wondered if it's because he's still blaming that.
Yeah, I think he was blaming that. He certainly seemed to be blaming the campaign. He certainly seemed to be blaming the media on it, too.
All I know, Joe, is
go ahead, Alan, and then we'll go to Bob.
All I know is that I could not turn the television on. I could not read my New York Times online without seeing an Alex Morse ad. And there was a lot of money in that campaign. Mayor Morse said that it was coming from small-time donors. But when you see that kind of money, you wonder.
Bob?
Yeah, there's a couple issues here, Joe. Historically, I think the first congressional district in Massachusetts has sent some incredible Congress people. I think back not just to Neal, but also to Silvio Conte, and men who really helped shape, you know, the current UMass, Amherst, and what's going on in the Valley. So I tip my hat to the voters there because I think they have sent some really great thinkers to Washington. The other issue, I do think the situation that we were just talking about played a role in the election. And to me, and I agree with what's being said, is that this isn't an issue of gay or not. It's an issue of a power differential and how you use that power. I absolutely fundamentally reject the notion that a faculty member in higher education should or could have a true consensual relationship with a student because of that power differential. And I think it just shows it showed really poor judgment. And you can be as angry as you want, but the judgment is still poor. And I do think it's going to affect him Morse's future in politics.
There was a news site that put out a story regarding the race and saying that basically showing that there was a concerted effort by those by students that had the Daily Collegian article saying that that they were jockeying for a position within the Neal campaign, and so that was the reason for it, and they were trying to make this up. The Collegian, they apologized for the release of the letter. However, they did not take back anything that they said in it. They said that they weren't backtracking on the substance of it, other than that they were sorry that it came out. So you can believe that or not, I guess, but it is. So there was, I mean, I think the New York Times used the term that he was vindicated. Alex Morse was vindicated in that. And I don't know if that's the word to use there.
Yeah, because Morse I don't think he argued the fact that it occurred. And so I'm really not sure how he was vindicated. And I also, frankly, don't have a problem with the Collegian printing something that was true. And again, this is that pattern I do something wrong and I'm going to yell
Democrats
at the press.
Trying to figure out how to go after him. Isn't that what politics is about? Opposition research. And how naive is he that he thought that they would not use something like that against him?
Is that a dirty
trick? He was not actually. Let me just say, he was not actually gentle with Richie Neal. I mean, those ads were incredibly angry about Neal.
Yeah.
And Neal still prevails by 18-20%. That's incredible.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we have a lot of letters to get to about these races, and then we'll start talking about the president in Kenosha and other stories that are making news this morning. We have a great panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Bob Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. We will continue with your letters, panel at WAMC.org, right after this. Isn't it annoying when you write an entire sentence and letter and then realize that the cap lock was on? Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us, and we'll get to your letters. Let's go. We go to Kevin, who says, I was driving around Berkshire County yesterday, and there were many more signs than Neal, 10 or 20 to 1. Neal's reputation is that he ignores Western Massachusetts and is beholden to the Springfield machine. Neal has been to our town maybe 3 times in 20 years. He has not been a supporter of East-West or North-South rail, buses only, big source of funds, and the timing of Morse's behavior was questionable, and Neal's behavior, question mark? I don't exactly know what...
What did Neal do?
Yeah, I don't know.
The president, I was pretty approving of that.
Diane said, I voted for Richie Neal because I didn't believe Mr. Morse had enough experience to run for national office. If he'd even had one term in the State House, I might have reconsidered. As an erstwhile Maryland restaurant, I first heard of this Joe Kennedy when Pelosi picked him to give the Democratic response to the State of the Union a couple years back. My thought at the time was, of all the articulate, intelligent Democratic members of Congress, Pelosi could not find anyone other than a white male with a name from a dynasty. Interesting.
Her support for Kennedy in this race will have any ramifications for her. I mean, she basically said that Markey had attacked the Kennedy name, and that's what rose her to come in full support of young Kennedy here. And it's just, you wonder if that's going to hurt her with some of her constituents who think that she's too old and conservative, too old fashioned and conservative in that sense.
Well, speaking of old, we have a couple of letters on that very subject. Jones said, would you discuss the possible roles ageism and decency played in the Massachusetts elections? Did anti-ageism and recognition of decency win out?
Well, if that happened, I'd say it bodes well for Joe Biden in the presidential race.
And not only that, obviously there was a win for Markey and a win for Neal. So I think people are people, and they're saying, you know, ageism is as bad as some of the other isms. I certainly subscribe to that at my age.
PJ writes, two creaky, oh, this is PJ. This may be JB's cousin. Two creaky incumbents win yet again. Term limits, please. 12 years for Congress and Supreme Court. I thought AOC was pushing for young progressives. Well, because she endorsed Markey.
I think
yeah.
that comment is ageist.
Yes. Max is... Go ahead.
I'm an ageist. I mean, I'm old, too, but I think that young blood on balance is better than old. And Markey has had some great ideas. I certainly don't think he's ready to retire. But, you know, on a six-year term, I think that you should go with the younger person.
Go ahead, Alan, and then Bob. Go ahead.
I was just saying the riskiest time for United States Senator, according to the stats, is the first term, not the third or the fourth. The first term is when they're at greatest risk, which is why they have to work so hard when they get elected for the first time.
Greater risk for what, to lose or die?
Yes, to lose.
Well, that good too, Rosemary. Brother. Yeah, that too. That's we're always at risk of that.
Yes.
Bob.
And that's that bit of sunshine that we promised early in the show. So thanks for keeping that theme going. But, you know, let me toss this at you, Rosemary.
We're talking about old people, so, you
but
know.
No, you're keeping it. That's
I
right.
I didn't get it.
Keeping it
but bringing new blood
the ageist thing is really in our presidential race where we have two creaky old-timers. And that should scare us. That's a hard job. And as an old person, I know that takes out of you. I'm tired doing the census. Much less running the U.S. government.
Bob?
You'd get help. You'd get some help, Rosemary.
Yeah, there'd be lots of help.
I'd hire young Kennedy to do my bidding.
Yes.
There's a difference, Joe, between bringing new people and thinking to political positions that is new, not young. It's not an age issue. It's bringing different thinking in, but we keep equating changing the people in power to somehow equate with youth or age, and it's not. I think you could put a new person in a position, and even if they're elderly, they're going to bring a different perspective, and that's part of what I read into the letter about, you know, term limits and how do we start to change what's going on with our political structure.
Couple more letters, whatever.
Well, that's a really nice thought, but when was the last time a great new idea came from a really old person? Oh, this is what a Bernie Sanders did for an old gentleman.
Ouch.
Alan had one at the beginning of the show.
The Bernie Sanders stuff he's been pitching for years, okay? And it got new traction recently because of the horrible conditions in our country. So I grant you that. But, yes, it is new ideas we want, and generally those come from people newer to the system, and they're younger.
Don't we also want experience? Don't we want somebody who has experience?
Yes.
Okay.
I do. Remember, I'm a Hillary supporter. I'm in favor of experience and common sense and calmness, but that's not the same as new ideas.
No, it's not. But what trumps the other, pardon that expression, but in the sense that if you we had an earlier letter about why they didn't vote for Alex Morse, because they wanted somebody they felt that Morse did not have a statewide experience and had only been a mayor of Holyoke, and they wanted somebody with more experience. So, I mean, that. Yes, you could have new ideas, but you also want somebody going into the office, perhaps that many would feel this way, that going into the office that has experience in how to run the government.
Correct.
Because we now see what happens when a president goes in with no political experience.
But we're having two separate discussions here. One is the value of experience, of which I am a big proponent. And the other is Bob's idea that, you know, that you can be old and have great new ideas. And perhaps you can, but I don't see a whole lot of evidence of that.
All right.
Well, we're moving, for example, in healthcare.
Side people.
Go ahead, Alan.
Well, we're moving ahead on health care, for example. You know, and a lot of people who are in a position to make that happen are doing that. That was one of the interesting discussions between the two candidates, Neil and Morris, which was that, you know, I want Medicare for all, says Morris. And Neil says, this is an evolutionary process, and that's the way we're going and getting it done. I hope he's right.
All right. Let's go to just a few more letters here before we go to the top of the hour break. I like this one. Dan said, whatever consultant convinced Markey to reposition himself as a new upstart AOC-style Democrat deserves a huge raise. He's been in Congress for 44 years with a few remarkable accomplishments, and yet my kids and their generation see him as a rock star. Amazing, says Dan. We go to Joan, who says, would you discuss the possible roles? Oh, I already read that one. I apologize. I already got to Joan. Stephen, please note that no public allegations of misconduct were filed against Alec Morris. No one said that he engaged in sexual contact with students in his classes at UMass. The young men were students in the vicinity of whom there are many. Thus, the power differential is much less relevant. We go to Mac, who says, please address the various accusations against Richard Neal about his dragging feet on pushing for Trump's tax returns and other topics, accusing him of being in the pocket of large medical and pharmaceutical industry donors. Mike, you touched on that. I almost didn't vote for him, but in the end, I did give him my support.
Well, you know, there's a couple of things here. Obviously, Richie Neal, I don't believe, is in anybody's pocket, except perhaps for Nancy Pelosi. He is a close lieutenant of Nancy Pelosi's. And if you love her, I do, you know, you give him great respect. You give him great respect for that. And if you don't, you know, it counts against him. But she did come out for him. And I think part of why he did so well, and boy, did he do well, was because of Pelosi's support.
Anybody else on that?
And how come it didn't work for Kennedy?
You know, when asked why, well, first of all, question, I don't think Kennedy, well, it's an okay question.
Okay. I'm sorry, Alan, I didn't mean that.
It's an okay question. All questions are okay. No, it didn't work for Kennedy. Good. Yeah, he didn't have it. Come on, he didn't have the rationale that would take him to be displace an older person.
But it no, is. But isn't it interesting? I mean, we talked about this when the endorsement was made. When Nancy Pelosi endorsed Kennedy, that it seemed odd.
Well, she said, "I like the Kennedys." Unquote. I think that was
I think
was.
Because she said that, she signaled that there's really no reason why I'm backing this guy, except I'm kind of from that old guard, and, you know, when the Kennedys reigned, and I'm doing this as a favor.
Well, and also, Mike, because he was in her house at the time. That is not true of Markey, who had been in the House, but
that's
who was
true.
Then
Markey
in the
left
Senate.
The house. Yeah.
Yes. So she was supporting her own person.
Good point. All right, ahead, Bob.
And you know, it's also, I would not be at all surprised if Pelosi's folks didn't reach out to Markey's folks and say, listen, you know, the speaker really felt compelled to have to do this, but it's nothing personal, you know. So I think she did what she did, but I also think there was probably a lot of backdoor communications to make sure that everybody understood the family was still together.
We have 2 minutes.
Do you ever hear the saying, never forget and never forgive?
Yes, the president very often. All the time.
I think that's embroidered on a pillow in your office, isn't it?
Yeah. Negative.
Just kidding.
Absolutely.
It will be now, Joe.
Never forget and never forgive. Come on, Joe.
Yeah. Ray Graff is sitting there going, thank God it's Joe's turn now.
you know, Bob, Ray is right across the glass from me, and that's exactly what he's doing right now. Debbie says, most of the commentary about Senator Markey's win talks about his Bernie Elizabeth Progressive Coalition, but I think he really won because he put them together with mature, traditional, informed Democrats. If it were only a progressive coalition, Morse would not have been beaten so badly. What do you all think? I don't.
Well, is that mixing two?
It is mixing two races. It is mixing. It started with right. Markey and we ended with Morse. But yes.
But I get it.
Crickets.
I think
the bigger the tent.
Simply being, embracing the new liberal, sort of the new green wave of the Democratic Party is not enough. The fact that he also had a base in a constituency that has known him and supported him for decades, combined with that, made him unbeatable. Marky, I mean.
two quick letters before we go. Bless you, Rosemary, for helping with the census. I have been proselytizing whenever I can about it. I'm terribly worried about an undercount. Here in the Berkshires, too many people are kvetching about the inconvenience of a census taker coming into their homes, totally ignoring or unaware of the importance of it. For the next 10 damn years, says Susan. And finally, Sue said, this is my third week as a census enumerator, as we are called. Frustrating. People don't open doors, but the teens I've met, some of whom interpret for their parents, have been wonderful.
I love it when I come to a foreign or a minority family and they'll say like six people live here and I go yes, because you're stopping that undercount. You're doing a small step to stop the undercount. But level of misinformation, lack of information, and fear, and just way stupidity is crazy.
And the word is kvetching. Not kvetching. There's no k in that. It's kvetching. The K goes directly into the V.
I think. For you to say.
Yeah, I was going to say. I think Mike and Rosemary will back me up, but I don't think we're genetically able to say it that way. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. I will work on my Yiddish, and we'll return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. President Trump on Tuesday inserted himself into a city already roiled by the police shooting of an unarmed black man, using a trip to Kenosha, Wisconsin, to highlight his hard-edge law and order message and press what he and his campaign advisors view as a political advantage against Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden. Unwelcome by local officials, including the city's Democratic mayor and the state's Democratic governor, but hailed by others, Trump and an entourage that included Attorney General William Barr descended on the city south of Milwaukee for a campaign-style journey that included a visit to businesses and properties destroyed in rioting and to meet with law enforcement officials. At an event focused on community safety near the end of the visit, Trump said that Kenosha had, quote, been ravaged by anti-police and anti-American riots, and vowed to stand firmly with law enforcement. Trump said, quote, to stop the political violence, we must also confront the radical ideology that includes this violence. Reckless far-left politicians continue to push the destructive message that our nation and our law enforcement are oppressive or racist. That from the Washington Post, Alan.
On that one, I'm going to pass.
You can pass. How about to Bob?
I pass to
Bob.
There's
an awful lot. Yeah, there's an awful lot to unpack here, Joe. It shows, I think what Trump is really about as a human being, that it's just about his election. It's not about bringing the country together. It's not showing empathy to a family whose son is now paralyzed. The president made the comment that the police officer who shot seven times was like a golfer choking on a putt. I mean, the complete lack of human empathy is incredibly disturbing in this story. In addition to that, I mean, the last thing in the world that community needed was a visit by Barr and Trump. It cost them resources. It cost them time when they could have been healing. And I'll call out this as another issue to talk about. Where are comments condemning the violence on the radical right? Where are the comments about a 17-year-old taking his AR-15 across the state line and killing two people? There's just this enormous disconnect in my mind between where Trump is and, frankly, where Trump's supporters are and what I think are core American values. And I don't think it's un-American to question the police. I really don't. I think it's part of our civil liberties. What I agree with Vice President Biden, though, is that there is no place for the looting and the arson and the violence. And frankly, I'm more and more convinced that a lot of the violence is being manipulated by folks that support Trump.
Yeah, I'm coming back, if I may, Joe. I know that I passed, but now that I'm on board, I wanted to just say that if Obama had come into a situation like this, we would not be saying, you know, the resources of the town or the city are being upset. No, we would have said, welcome, President Obama. But what they say and the kinds of things that Bob is talking about here is what the real issue is. This man, what words can't you use on the radio? You can't say
there's a
pig,
lot of them.
Right? You can't say pig. So this guy comes in and he does these things and he knows it's going to infuriate everybody in the middle and to the left, and to solidify his group. That's what this is all about.
Rosemary.
I said this yesterday, and Kellyanne Conway said it too, that the more we talk about violence, the more Trump is controlling both the narrative and the way this election campaign goes on. He comes out as strong and unwavering, and he will protect you from violence and from inept Democratic leadership. Let us not forget, it isn't just one man paralyzed in Kenosha. It's almost 200,000 Americans dead because of his mismanagement of mm-hmm. COVID. It's the economy in shambles because he tried to open too soon. He is an incompetent and uncaring executive, and that's what we should be talking about, not what he said in Kenosha, which was just ridiculous.
Mike?
Yeah, I do think it's important, though, at least quickly, to note that, you know, it was such a show that they put on in Kenosha. He had a forum at the end of his tour of the damaged areas, and only two people in the room were people of color. It was a pastor and his wife, and he let the pastor say a prayer. But when reporters tried to ask the pastor a question, Trump broke in, said, wouldn't let him answer the questions. And when Trump himself was asked about institutional racism, he just continues to say two things. He says, it's just a couple bad apples in different departments. And Bob's good to point out that perhaps that policeman who shot the nine shots, he choked just the way you would if you were trying to do a putt. You know, I mean, that even Laura Ingraham on Fox News was taken aback by that metaphor. I mean, when you have more Laura Ingraham correct you and kind of put you back on track,
right,
you know you've gone. And what about the wackadoodle stuff? I mean, I know that we're not talking about his total failure on coronavirus, and it needs to be underscored. But when he talks about these rumors of airplanes full of Antifa people coming to the Republican convention and just sort of suggesting them, and all these wackadoodle things, it's almost like he's he's on another bizarro world. And I think it needs to be pointed out as you zero back and circle back to the biggest story that's going on in the United States right now, and that is that we are continuing to be struggling, trying to get ahead of this coronavirus. And now I understand why we're pulling out of the World Health Organization, because Trump doesn't want to participate in any worldwide distribution of a vaccine when it's available. He probably wants to say America first, but that could mean America last.
Hmm.
Bob, I think maybe Rosemary talked about it yesterday, but you know, the idea of this this dark group who were in the plane coming from a dark place. There have been many who have now said that that's an anti-Semitic reference. You'd have to prove it, but it sounded reasonable to me.
Well, isn't that, yeah. I mean, that's the case with so many of the things that he says, that it's just enough to make you wonder and probably, but you don't, you know.
Yeah, maybe it's just another distraction that now we're talking about instead of coronavirus, Rosemary, perhaps.
Yeah.
But exactly, Rosemary, I think he
is trying to distract all of those listeners who yelled at us for 3 years now that we're being distracted. You all are being distracted by violence. Violence is not the overwhelming issue facing our country right now. It's pandemic and injustice. And the Democrats have got to turn the message to that.
The overwhelming issue is getting rid of Trump. That's the overwhelming issue, Rosemary, if I may say. And right now, the polls, at least, are indicating that that's happening. What'd you say? I'm sorry.
I can't disagree with that, Alan, is what I said.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the polls are interesting to watch. I mean, they go up and down a little bit every day. But right now, Trump, under one poll I read this week, is about where he was at this point 4 years ago. Biden is farther ahead than Hillary was because there's fewer undecided people at this point. But it is that, isn't there, Alan, a point like right after Labor Day when they take a poll and that sort of identifies the trajectory of the campaign? And in most races, it kind of tells you who's going to win?
Yes.
We're getting close to that, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Monday.
Very close to it, sure. You're exactly
although
right.
we didn't, I mean, the pollsters didn't do a great job in 2016. So there's an awful lot of work that has got to get done.
That's not really true. They did do a great job. We didn't do a great job interpreting what the pollsters found, which was that it was extremely close, and it was indeed. We just called it like, okay, Hillary will pull it off, and she did not. But really, they were not that off.
That's why I
continue to be worried about the polls now, which show some distance between the two candidates. But considering the offenses committed by Trump, why is it not bigger?
You know, I have to challenge that, though. I mean, I realize it's just one news source, but every day in the New York Times leading up to Election Day, there was that poll on the bottom, that Nate Silver, that said Hillary Clinton has a 93% chance of winning the election. And it would go down. And I remember watching it on election night go from 90 to 80 to 70 to 50 to 40 to, she lost. I don't know. I mean, they were using those polls to the point where it was very convincing that it was. I mean, look, even the president was surprised that he won.
I've said it.
I admit that is true, but my idea that that there was manipulation of poll results or poll voting in three states has never been really sufficiently investigated in the United States, and now we know that the Russians are again interfering in our elections.
So I
just don't know. She did win, by the way, in popular vote.
Correct.
That's another thing that we did not take into account when we were analyzing polls is where her votes were.
Alan?
Yeah, the other thing we didn't take into account, I know you're a Hillary supporter, Rosemary, is that I truly believe there are a lot more people who had issues with Hillary, whether you're a supporter or not, than with Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden is not offensive to so many people that Hillary was. And therefore, I don't think you're going to find the same last-minute kind of thing happening here. And I think he's been brilliant in the way he's been playing it. Yes, we don't want anybody burning or looting or being violent. That's exactly what he should have done. He did exactly what he should have.
Well, I admit that 11 days before the election, you're not going to have the head of the FBI come out and say, oh, we are investigating her again. That was definitely hard
terrible.
To deal with. So
terrible.
I can't see that happening with Biden.
Bob?
Which is why I will never forgive him.
Yeah. Bob?
You know, it's a... There are a couple of points I'd like to toss into the mix. One, I do appreciate everything you're saying, Rosemary. And, you know, we lost another, almost 1,100 Americans yesterday to COVID. You know, so the death count continues. And even today, the most recent numbers, you know, we're up to 187,400 dead Americans. And you're right. It is getting lost in the noise. At the same time, though, there are some patterns here that every American should be really worried about, and that's the use of violence by the government. And you know that I'm really pro first responder. I appreciate what the police and fire and EMTs do every single day, but I'll hearken back to what happened outside the White House, where on the orders of the Attorney General, our chief law enforcement officer, innocent Americans were clubbed and gassed in order for a photo op. I mean, I kept waiting to see the president pull out a Bible yesterday, but I guess he held it up once, and that's probably all he can handle.
But where was the outrage? Where was the outrage? It's just, the question.
It should be. And, you know, and this is Alan, this is where I struggle with. You know, I think about the far right who has fought the federal government for so many years, concerned about the power of federal law enforcement and that whole area of conspiracy that now they're absolutely ignoring. So I really do struggle with sort of this Alice in Wonderland situation that the country seems to be in. It's very broken right now.
By the way, did anybody notice Bill Barr's face when he was walking around with the president yesterday? That was not a happy camper face, I'll tell you right now. It really looked like he was in the doldrums.
Yeah,
we had to walk, Alan. That's probably
Bob.
He should be impeached. That's using his office to help that man get elected again. That's completely politicizing the his office.
Do you think?
Yes.
And for people who are listening, if you go on YouTube, watch the interview with Laura Ingraham and Donald Trump.
And if you
don't leave absolutely horrified, I mean, to watch somebody as unhinged as Ingraham can be, struggle to try to create a pathway of logic for this man. It's both amusing and terrifying. But if you haven't seen it and you're on the fence about who to vote for, watch that one clip and say, "Oh my God!" I mean, how could
and then go back and read the facts about
Malcolm
coronavirus.
Talked about that yesterday, and I went back and looked at it again. He's right. It's just wacko. It's really crazy.
It is, yeah, I mean, to have her be the adult in the room. But the other thing too is when she calls him out on it, he doesn't really even understand that she's trying to help him, because he just goes on with it. But he choked.
Yeah.
It is very disturbing to watch.
You know, just even that. I mean, think about that. He choked. It's a matter of choking, he said. And you're talking about chokeholds, the whole issue here that set off this string of violence that he's so into now. Really, Malcolm's word is right. It's just insane.
But how come he gets away with doing that? And if Joe Biden or any other legitimate candidate running for his office even makes a slight, even goes near that point once, it crucifies them, and people will just go crazy. Why is it that there's so much tolerance for Trump's wackadoodle statements like that?
Because the Civil War isn't over
yet.
That's why.
And the latest thing now is that Trump wants a drug screen before the presidential debates.
Yeah.
I think Biden should go for that.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'll have statins in it, you know, and all those kinds of things that we old people take, you know.
Well, never mind. You just wonder why Trump would want to take a drug test, but okay.
Besides the drug test, though.
Denied, yes. Oh, sorry. I was going to say the story from 2017 where he was rushed to Walter Reed.
Right.
That has resurfaced, and they asked Trump about it yesterday, and he said, "I didn't have any mini strokes." Well, no one asked him about mini strokes, and the report wasn't that he had a mini stroke. So
right, and then he blamed the press for making up it was fake news, and it was like, "Well, you're the one who said mini stroke. We never said that."
Right. I mean, it's weird. Very weird.
It is. By the way, whenever I love Mike that you're here and saying the word wackadoodle so much, I'm enjoying that greatly.
It's appropriate, right?
Oh. Sadly, yes. We go to Michael, who writes to us, "Joe Biden raised $300 million in August, higher than Hillary and Trump combined in August 2016, and double what Trump raised last month. Isn't this a good sign?" I thought he was actually outraised by Trump last month. Is that true? Anyone? I'll check it. I just was wondering.
Yeah. I mean, that was my recollection as well.
I mean, the point that they're making is good, that he did make more money than Hillary. I just don't know. I don't know about the fundraising for August. I have to check in on that. Dan says it's being reported by several outlets that Trump's appearance at the burnt out camera store in Kenosha was staged with the previous business owner, while the current owner refused to appear in the Trump circus. Don't know about that one either. Liz writes, Trump gets too much credit when talking about Trump. What if the media starts referring to him as Trump and the people behind him? I believe the term that Rosemary always uses is Trump and his cronies. So I don't know if that's close enough to what Liz wants.
That is enablers.
Yes. To bring light on Stephen Miller especially, we all know
or
Trump.
Or his Muppets.
Don't disparage the Muppets, Bob. We all know Trump can create a plan or a strategy. So not only would Trump hate other people getting credit, we expose the vile people behind him that are the operators. This would also infuriate Trump because he needs the spotlight. It might also make the unbearable daily dose of Trump less toxic and diffuse his power. Anyone? Hearing none, I move on. Then we go to this letter from Bob. At first blush, Trump's refusal yesterday to recognize structural racism in American society seemed like just more of his willful ignorance, but I think there's something else going on. After all, if there's no racism, then ipso facto, there can't be any white supremacists either. Those heavily armed extremists become magically transformed into patriots, bravely looking to protect property from lefty anarchists. Plays suspiciously well into his BS narrative, does it not?
Yes, yeah, that's a great letter. Thank you. And he is definitely playing to this sense of white victimhood. That he's not only doubling down, he's tripling down on this. That somehow white Americans have been getting screwed by the system, and I worry that that's part of why we've seen a slight bump in his ratings, but it's definitely something that he's doing.
Rosemary.
No, he said it. He's right. Agree.
Alan.
So the thing that has been puzzling me from day one, and I have not been following the daily rating today or yesterday, but the thing that is that it isn't working. So I don't get why he keeps doubling down on going to his base over and over and over again. There aren't enough of them to win. And he isn't doing what he needs to do to get the middle of the purples, as I've always said. So frankly, I can't figure it out.
Yeah, although Ellen, I think they really believe that there's a large silent vote out there, and he is targeting the demographic that he's going to need, which is the female suburban voters, and that's why this whole idea of fear, you know, he went after the idea that that the suburbs are going to be turned into Section 8 housing, which is again these are the old racist tropes.
That's as racist as you get.
Right, and he doesn't care about he doesn't care about 80% of the country. It's just enough votes for him to get through the Electoral College, and that's it. That's it.
Yeah,
he's never been
strategy.
About the country.
And Joe, I know that you're our poll checker, and that you tell us what's happening. So
I'm doing it as we speak, but I'm having trouble finding exactly what I'm looking for. But I will get to you in just. Hopefully find it in just a second.
Fascinating. Just fascinating.
I looked at it earlier, Joe, and on 538, they're showing sort of Biden in the high 40s, some into the low 50s, Trump in the low 40s to at times up to like 44, so the mid 40s. There was an outlier in today's polling. I think it was from Emerson. That actually had Trump ahead of Biden, which if I remember correctly was a really a different set of numbers than what most of the other polls were showing.
Yeah, the other thing too, 538 is doing a neat thing. I just for those of you who follow this stuff, I think they've added. I don't know, maybe somebody could correct me on this, but I don't know if they've done this all along or they're just doing it, but. They have a rating of the they're rating the polls in the sense of giving them an A through F.
Yes.
And so a poll such as Rasmussen or Zogby gets a lower, like a C minus or a D, which is
excessive.
Like polls like Marist, I believe, gets an A. CN, I think, gets an A minus. So those polls are rated. So it's interesting to see where they come from and helps in trying to figure out all this stuff. To the point, as of today, the Ipsos poll was the latest one. They get a B minus, and that has Biden at 47%, Trump at 40. And the latest poll from Suffolk University, which came out on September 1st, has Biden up by 5. So we have to hold there. We'll be back and continue our conversation. Our last go-round here, the last call on the roundtable panel. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We'll get to a few more stories as well. Panel@WAMC.org, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Robert Griffin, and Rosemary Armeo. First, this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We welcome, the whole phones. Did we lose everybody? Do we have Alan? Is Alan there?
I'll never go away.
I'm here, Joe.
Hi, Alan. Okay.
And also Bob is there.
Hi, Bob.
Yes. Hi, Joe. Hi, Alan. Hi, everybody.
All right, and then we have to get Mike back. Okay.
What happened to Rosemary? Did she leave?
No, Rosemary's here.
I'm here. No, oh, I'm great. Here. So watch it.
I have to. I'll watch it on the way to Fire Island.
Everyone was saying to me.
Almost made it through without that.
Yeah. Everyone was saying yesterday how nice it is that you and Roselle are going back to Fire Island for your anniversary.
We're
going to
do it. We're going to get in the car. We're going to get in the car and drive all the way to Bay Shore, get on the ferry, have lunch at Matthew's restaurant, walk around on the beach for a little while, turn around, get on the ferry, come back and drive the 3.5 hours back. Not bad for old people, right?
That is so romantic.
That is romantic.
Really, props for that.
You mean it was a good idea for an old person, Rosemary? Is that what you're saying?
You're too kind, Rosemary.
Mike, are you there?
I am.
All right.
A little technical difficulty, but it's been taken care of.
Yes, we've been we're riding the storm here, but that's all right. It's all good. All right, let's move on to some other stuff here and talk about other stories as we work our way through the next 15 minutes or so, 10, 12 minutes that we have together. I would like to talk about, there's a couple of stories that we have mentioned that are, Rosemary mentioned two of them, and I would like to focus on, well, hopefully we can get to both of them, but if not, we will, we'll work on the one about Russian disinformation, and that is the fact that both Facebook and Twitter tell us that they are once again targeted for by the Russians and are having an influence. And so it brings up the question of that we've had for a long time, well, what is being done? The company said that the FBI had warned them that the Kremlin-backed internet research agency set up a network of fake user accounts and a website. The Russian group that interfered in the 2016 presidential election is at it again, using a network of fake accounts and a website set up to look like a left-wing news site. That, according to Facebook and Twitter, the disinformation campaign by the Kremlin-backed group, known as the Internet Research Agency, is the first public evidence that the agency is trying to repeat its efforts from 4 years ago and push voters away from the Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden to help President Trump. Intelligence agencies have warned for months that Russia and other countries were actively trying to disrupt the November election and that Russian intelligence agencies were feeding conspiracy theories designed to alienate Americans by laundering them through fringe sites and social media. Now Facebook and Twitter are offering evidence of this meddling, even as the White House in recent weeks has sought to more tightly control the flow of information about foreign threats to November's election and downplay Russian interference. Can you imagine? Alan.
Well, I'll go to Bob as soon as I can, but I have to say, we knew it was going to happen.
Right.
Basically, they're not at all ashamed of doing it. They're getting credit, I'm sure, from the orange person for doing it, and they are, who has never said a bad word about Putin or the Russians, or if he said it, it's only in passing. But believe me, he's their friend, and now they're doing it more. And nobody, and this is what's so extraordinary, nobody is saying boo. It really, I mean, the newspapers are writing about it and the rest of it.
Right.
But again, I say what I said in the beginning, where's the outrage?
Bob.
Yeah, it's stunning. The silence is so deafening and says so much about where we are right now in our political life. And this is also where it's so dangerous for Trump to continue to push and peddle the conspiracy theories that he has, you know, because what we really realize is that a lot of these conspiracy theories are lies that are being fueled by Russian money. They're being fueled by Russian intelligence. And then they're supported by the paranoia of Trump. And when you start to think also about you know, the director of national intelligence telling Congress that he's going to be significantly cutting back on the number of briefings. You see this as a continued breakdown of the balance of power between the executive branch and the legislative branch.
Yeah. Yes.
And this idea of continuing to stoke fear of the left is part and parcel to the Trump playbook. I will also toss this onto the table for consideration. This is exactly what Stone and Manafort and Flynn and others were doing in 2016. And I will note with Flynn and Stone that they got pardons that were not deserved.
Can I just say I take exception to only one word you used, and that is paranoia. You know, I think this guy is the consummate actor. I don't think he really believes this garbage. I'm talking about Trump now. I think what he does is he puts it out there. He says but it isn't as if he really believes it. He doesn't have to believe it. He just has to scare other people. So I don't know that it's a genuine paranoia on his part. I think it's worse than that. I think it's evil.
Mm.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree with the evil piece, but, you know, Alan, I push back gently to say that, you know, he has created this sort of web of victimhood. I mean, it's the same thing I was saying earlier about the sort of white victimhood. Trump has presented himself as if the world has been stacked against him. I mean, you couldn't get a much bigger silver spoon than the guy had. And yet it's always how horrible the country is, how horrible people are to him. And we don't recognize his you know, his greatness and intelligence. He's just a sick guy. I mean, I know we're not supposed to, you know, to prognosticate about people's health or mental health, but there's something wrong with the dude.
Mm. You make a point.
Your expert opinion.
Wrong with Americans too. Yes. That they're letting him get away with this. This has been going on now for 4 years. We've known about it.
Yeah.
Nothing has been done to rectify the problems that we saw in the 2016 election. And the Russians have gotten smarter. Now they're not doing the writing themselves. You know, one of the giveaways to fake news and misinformation is bad grammar. So they're hiring American writers, out of work journalists, to do their fake ads now. Our own high-tech companies are not really doing any monitoring or checking. We're still relying on the FBI, which I think Trump has tried to defang. The latest catches were by the FBI, not by Facebook themselves. Facebook is still debating what they're going to do, and actually they're not even contemplating doing anything until after the election is over and the damage is done. And his little new director of national security, his little Ratcliffe rat-faced crony is saying, oh, it's really China that's the bigger problem. And there's really no evidence that anyone has come forward with that China is running disinformation campaigns. And meanwhile, we go back to the Russians. We have one of the main opposition leaders to Putin is now in a Berlin hospital. They've said today definitely poison. A poison that's been used in a number of Russian assassinations. And this is the man that our president supports and adores. And it's okay with us? Is it really?
The only correction that I put out here.
We have a minute, but go ahead.
China is just as virulent and dangerous as Russia is. They absolutely
not
are.
Not in this disinformation campaign.
They're just not as good at it. That's the problem. Yeah, I mean,
and the other problem is
both of you are selling the Chinese really short, but okay.
Yeah, China's bad. I got no question about that. But Trump can attack China, but you won't find him attacking the Russians. You just won't.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I mean,
no,
look,
and this is where
we have to go. The defender of China, we know the Russians are doing it, and
why do we have to go?
I know
that's a problem.
But I'm sure if you call Rosemary, she'll just keep going. Yeah, she'll come to your house.
She's got to get out there and knock. She's got to get there and knock on doors.
She'll come to your house and count you. All right. My thanks to everybody. Alan, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
You too, Joe.
Mike Spain, Bob Griffin, Rosemary Armeo, thanks to all. A special thanks to Mike for answering his phone at the last minute. Love to you all. We'll be back right after this.